This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome back to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm T. Shao Ik with Kelly Anissa and Juliet Jacobs. Earlier we discussed whether the moral subject should be taken out of the school syllabus, and we've been getting some really great insightful comments from all of you on Twitter and WhatsApp. So keep that coming in, and we also have a call from Ashraf who has some thoughts. Good afternoon, Ashraf.
Hello.
Hi. Yes, you'd like to weigh in on the subject of the moral subject.
Yes, I have some thoughts.
Yes.
I think that if you want to replace it, you should replace it with something that is that has to do with deciding whether something is right or wrong. Because some children have a very unhealthy family, like a dad who's a prisoner or a mom who does drugs. So you still, not everyone is like, not everyone knows whether that thing is right or wrong. So that's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ashraf.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling. So, any more comments as well on social media?
Yes, we have a message on WhatsApp that from Sui Lim, who says that moral studies is the byproduct of trying to reconcile religious studies elements in a secular education system. So, Sui Lim says that we should teach civic studies in primary school and then let students choose some classical humanities subjects in secondary school.
That's an interesting idea.
Yep. And over on Twitter, Nurhayati says moral studies can be taught in an informal way. How you keep the school clean, how everyone else treats each other.
Absolutely.
It would be more effective than didactic teaching. I totally agree with that.
Yep.
Ali Rahim says, please take away Pendidikan Islam too, since it's back to back with moral waste. It's a waste of students' time. Okay. And Observer One Over also on Twitter says, for Muslim students, Islamic religious studies is more than enough to inculcate good moral values.
Opposing views there about the Pendidikan Islam, but I feel that the education ministry should be listening to all our listeners. They have some pretty interesting insights.
And just one more that's just come in on WhatsApp from Cheong. Any subject that can be passed by memorization is obsolete. The problem of not having enough teachers to teach any subject, well, you know, like English teachers, that can be solved with YouTube. But just find among all the teachers retired or not and record videos and play it in class. Class teachers will act as support. So that's Cheong over on WhatsApp. So yes, do keep your comments coming in. You know, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio. You can send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899, or you can call us at 7733-2900. And just a reminder, we're asking you over on Twitter, should we do away with moral studies in school? So your options are yes, B, yes, but teach something else, C, no, but it should be revamped, or D, no, keep it as it is. So just keep those comments coming in.
I mean, the whole discourse really revolves around the question, is the subject really producing ethical, responsible and caring individuals? Now, we only have to look at the way we talk about migrant communities to know the answer to that, don't we?
Yes.
So, our second story is about a local amateur photographer, Abedin Mung, I think, who took a photo of a Bangladeshi construction worker. And the picture has since gone viral, with many people complimenting him for his so-called runway looks.
Yeah, and the photo was first shared on Twitter by the photographer, and then it was picked up by news outlets. So, both in Malaysia as well as in India and Bangladesh. And this is the gist of what Abedin tweeted along with his picture. He said, he is an MRT construction worker. I first met him when I was doing a vlog. I know it's going to be a good shot sebab lighting tengah on, pakaiannya on, mata dia is a must photographed eyes. And he was very shy. And plus, he didn't really know where to look at sebab phone kot. Berkali-kali aku pointkan dekat kamera, shot banyak tak on. Until dia betul-betul pandang dan dia mengeluh sikit. Then he took a shot and he asked, isn't he beautiful? So this picture has gotten over 25,000 retweets and 70,000 likes.
And Abedin later found out that the Bangladeshi man's name, which we will not reveal in full here, we will only be referring to him as Irfan. The reason we're being cautious is because it's really not clear whether Irfan gave his consent for his picture to be taken and for his full name to be revealed. In fact, Abedin later tweeted that Irfan has been creeped out by other people going to his worksite and attempting to take his picture.
Wow. And, you know, apart from consent or possibly the absence of it, what this photo has also highlighted is the xenophobia of Malaysians. So some of the comments on Twitter were about how foreign workers have a bad body odour or, you know, buat jenayah, like commit crimes.
Yeah, we're just going to read a couple of, well, particularly nasty ones. And I must warn you or caution you that you may find them offensive. I mean, we certainly did. So some of the comments that came were, I guess we can pay him to breed more silver eyes. Another comment, a pathetic look. Yeah, hope he is doing well here and earn enough money to take him home to Bangladesh. And one other one was, this is the reason why so many Bini Orang ran away with Bangla
it's
men.
It's really, really terrible stuff.
But, you know, very symptomatic or very, I guess
reflective,
it shows. Reflective, yeah, that's the word I was looking for, of what people are actually thinking. But, what's reassuring from all of this, I guess, is that those who posted these very negative comments were excoriated by others.
But there's still entrenched xenophobia, even in the so-called positive comments. So, for example, somebody who said, wait till an educated Bangladeshi reads this. You know, what does that imply? It's as if to say that most of the Bangladeshi community in Malaysia can't read.
Yeah, and also the overwhelming tone of the comments kind of objectifies Irfan, you know, purely by focusing on his physical traits. Yeah. You know, many suggested that his model-like looks will be his ticket out of his current circumstance. And some wondered, you know, what if he had Oriental skin combined with his beautiful eyes. Presumably, if he had Oriental eyes and South Asian skin, the narrative would have been very, very different. And some of the compliments have a very, I suppose, condescending tone, you know, such as the person who wrote, and I quote, truly striking features. I hope that we can now extend more respect and appreciation to our Bangladeshi workers. So only now we know that how good looking they are, we should respect them.
I got a little bit of that sense.
Yeah.
And much rarer were the comments that actually acknowledged the challenges faced by migrant workers here and the lack of recognition for their rights. So for example, Mahmoud Ahmad 1982 said they earn their money by sweating in drums and people are talking about a good photo shoot. So let's do something for their well-being instead of gaining popularity.
Right on. You know, we should, of course, acknowledge that the photographer probably did have the good intention of trying to highlight the individuals in our migrant worker community. And there's actually been some sort of feedback from Bangladeshis living here in Malaysia, such as Siti Ajma on Facebook, who is half Bangladeshi and half Malaysian. She grew up facing racial slurs and xenophobia, she says. And she believes that if people are appreciating this construction worker, then it's good news for the community.
And there was also a Bangladeshi student living in Malaysia who tweeted, Abidin Singh, I would like to thank you for photographing Bangladeshi workers in a positive light, which is rarely reflected by Malaysians. So the word Bangla has become a synonym for a derogatory way of describing us, when in fact Bangla is our language, not the term for our race. So thank you for using your platform meaningfully.
I just want to say that I remember budget announcement 1 year and former Prime Minister Najib was actually referring to Bangladeshis as Bangla Bangla and, you know, making everyone laugh like it was a huge joke. It was really quite
this
awful.
This from a Prime Minister. Real statesman he is.
Yeah.
This morning, though, I caught up with Shivaji Das, the founder of the Migrant and Refugee Poetry Competition, to get his thoughts. So Shivaji started this competition in Singapore and Malaysia to give a voice to refugees and lower-skilled foreign workers and to be able to celebrate their literary talents. So here's my conversation with him. So the photographer's tweet and subsequent news articles generated a lot of comments. Some were complimentary, but some were pretty xenophobic as well. How do you think the tone of these comments reflect our attitude towards migrant workers?
Yeah, I think this is a broader reflection of the attitude we have towards migrant workers, but I don't think it's just about migrant workers. We are also talking about visual reflections of identity, of race, in terms of skin color, in terms of economic status as well. You know, so all these combine to create certain perceptions of certain groups of people. So, I mean, such comments could have come about a poor person who is working or doing hard labor as well. Because we expect them to look and smell and give a certain kind of vibe. And I think that's what we are seeing.
But on the other hand, there are also a lot of positive aspects. But the stunning thing is probably that everyone is talking mostly about the visual appearance of the person rather than looking at his background or anything beyond the visual appearance.
From the photographer's description, it sounds like the man was sort of reluctant to have his picture taken. And subsequently, the photographer reported back that the man has been creeped out by other people attempting to take his picture. So even if one has sort of good intentions of engaging with migrant workers or trying to give them a voice, how can it potentially become exploitation of the person instead?
This is an inherent problem in journalism, in photography as well, you know, where there is this ethical issue of benefiting from other people's difficult situation. And that's a problem that we can't avoid when someone else is picking up a cause on your behalf or someone else is doing the talking on your behalf. And this is what probably is happening here as well. And that's one of the reasons that some of the initiatives that we have been doing in Malaysia, Singapore, Taiwan, and other places, we are trying to give a voice directly to the people we are trying to work with.
So how would, in this situation, a photographer or somebody wanting to interact with the community, how can they do this without robbing them of their voices? And, you know, what are the issues of consent here?
Yeah. So in this case, it was not very clear if it was not a picture with consent, because it seemed like the person had agreed. It was more that he was shy in front of the camera, and that's why he had to take many takes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, many people went to take his pictures again, from what it seems like, and that may be strange experience for the person himself.
Mm-hmm.
The way I believe that usually people have tried to manage this issue, and it's always not 100% perfect, is to get the consent of the person, give more description, I believe, like what's the name of this person and what does he do, what's his background, so that it's not just a picture, there's more to that person, and sort of humanizing this attempt rather than just showing it as an image. And of course, to also highlight some of the other issues that this person may be facing, to provide a bit more perspective rather than just the image. Some even have gone to the extent of donating whatever financial gains they may have got from such activities when they are speaking on behalf of the others.
Mm-hmm.
They have went on to donate all the financial proceeds to communities or NGOs who work with these communities for their benefit. So these are some ways, but again, it's not 100% foolproof in terms of removing the ethical issues involved with someone speaking on behalf of others.
Shivaji, you also started the Migrant Worker Poetry Competition a few years ago, and this was to give fringe communities a platform to share their stories. How has this helped to dispel the stereotypes and labels given to, let's say, migrant workers in particular?
Yeah, so we have been running the Migrant Worker and Refugee Poetry Competition in Malaysia for 4 years now. We do a similar thing with migrant workers in Singapore.
Mm-hmm.
We have done with refugees in Kenya. And last year, we ran the first ever Global Migrant Festival in Singapore, where there were participants from refugee and migrant worker communities from Malaysia as well. The founding idea of these kind of events was that we don't do the speaking on behalf of the communities we are working with, which in this case are migrant workers, low-wage migrant workers, not all migrant workers, and refugees, but let them speak out on behalf of themselves. So they come on stage, they read their poetry that they have written, and it's up to them what are the causes they want to highlight. So some have talked about exploitation, some have talked about their rights, some have talked about the political situation back home. They have also talked about social issues in their communities. So it's up to them what they want to highlight and how they want to highlight. We just organize the platform and let them take the center stage In terms of impact, of course, the migrant communities, we sense that they look forward to these kind of events. They're very happy to participate in these events. In terms of actual impact, I don't think that I can say it has led to tangible benefits in on a wide scale as yet in any of the communities we have been working with, whether Singapore, Malaysia, or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it has indeed created some awareness about such communities and brought them out a bit more in the open, voices we never heard of and were even shy or scared to talk to them. At least now the engagement level for some people has been higher, especially the artistic and literary communities who have been working with them. And also the media has been very supportive, and such events have been showcased both in national and international media quite widely. And that has led to some global level of awareness. But again, I would say I think there has been very humble impact so far, and there's a long way to go for us.
And finally, Shivaji, I mean, if we are talking about the visual medium, taking on from this example of the photographer's picture, how can this visual platform be used appropriately to reflect migrant workers' identities, again, without exploiting them?
Yeah. So there are a few similar initiatives which I'm aware of. In Hong Kong, there is a domestic helper called Joan Pavona. Mm-hmm. She has become quite a well-known photographer. She even won awards in National Geographic. Mm-hmm. So it's she herself who takes these pictures, and it's the world we see from a domestic helper's eyes, who is a migrant from Philippines into Hong Kong. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is one way. People have experimented with giving cameras to migrant workers and refugees to take pictures of their surroundings, their dormitories, and all that. That is one way of letting migrants and refugees speak for themselves through this visual medium. We have a theater group here in Singapore called The Birds, which is composed entirely of migrant workers, and they have been using theater as a medium. We have also had performance art and multimedia art, combining a few platforms like video, photography, and poetry to talk about migrant workers. So there are different ways of doing that, and it's quite a powerful tool, just as culture is a powerful tool of raising any issue. But again, I think one of the to make it more effective would be to give the instruments and the platform to the communities themselves rather than someone else doing it, which has some of these ethical concerns.
That was Shivaji Das, the founder of the Migrant and Refugee Poetry Competition. And we've got quite a lot of comments on this story as well, Juliet.
Yeah, we've got some messages over on WhatsApp. So Cynthia Gunnison said, "We're largely a society that doesn't want our migrant workers to even be seen amongst us, yet we're more than happy to objectify them." How hypocritical. You are very right, Cynthia Gunnison.
Spot on, Cynthia Gunnison.
Also, Sui Lim has this to say, "Malaysian xenophobia towards migrant workers is rooted in class and racism. Local attitudes towards Western and East Asian first world workers are completely different." Yes, you are totally right. Mm. And we even refer to them as expatriates and not migrant workers. Yes, I've always had a problem with that,
yes,
Sweetlin.
And so Shivaji, in the competition that he runs, you know, he talks about the platform really has to highlight the low-wage migrant workers, because those are the ones who are being marginalised. Yeah. Their voices are not being heard.
Exactly. And also on WhatsApp, Alvin Lam had this to say, "I'm from a kitchen consulting line, and when there is an installation for our projects, the majority of our labour, you know, that does the heavy lifting and technical things are, you know, done by Bangladesh workers who have been in Malaysia. They've learned the trade. They even speak Cantonese and Malay. Mm. They are really nice people and generally very friendly. We need to realise that there are other races in the world, and just because they look different and have different cultures, that, you know, we should treat them any different. When was the last time you learned a new language that isn't spoken in your own country in a short period or gone to a foreign country to make a living and not end up homeless? These people deserve more respect as humans." I know I do.
Yeah,
I totally agree with you there, Alvin. Some of the workers, you know, especially when I was pregnant and trying to fill petrol, the lovely Bangladeshi workers would, you know, make me go and stand far away. They would fill up the petrol for me.
So you're not inhaling.
Yeah, you know, and barely knew me, didn't know me at all. They just lovely people. It's yes. very helpful.
So I think the way to be able to respect them is to hear their stories from their voices and yes. not through our gaze, which is from a very privileged position. Mm-hmm. And I particularly like Humans of KL, which of course follows Humans of New York and all yeah. that, which allows people from different communities to tell their own stories. And we learn their name, we learn who they are as a person, yeah. not as an object, not as this homogenous group. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
yeah.
And how about a last call for our poll, which is related to our first story on the moral studies subject?
Yep. So we asked you over on Twitter, should we do away with moral studies? And 41% of you said no, but it should be revamped. Mm. Another 34% of you said yes, it should teach something else. 18% of you said yes, do away with it. And 7% of you said no, keep it as it is. And we still got a few messages in relation to that. Harry says that moral studies must stay, but should be excluded from written examination. Perhaps a more practical approach to teach moral values will be best. This subject cannot be taken out. We have too many bad people in the world who think moral studies is irrelevant and this needs to change. I don't know about that.
I mean, in that case, I think everybody would have to learn moral studies, right? I mean, so we're not just talking about it as an alternative for non-Muslim students,
yes, yes.
right?
Yeah. And it should be learned at home. I mean, just really, mm-hmm. family, what are we doing? The number of drivers I see where they are exhibiting all kinds of road rage and bad behavior when they're driving while children are in the backseat, that's yeah. moral studies right there.
Yeah, yeah, mm. or lack of it. Mm. Yeah. one more message over on WhatsApp. Someone says, my secondary school gave out little booklets with the 36 nilai and definitions on, I think, see, everyone can't get the word nilai out yeah. of their vocabulary. It's like imprinted. Yes. On exam days, all of us pendidikan moral students would be memorizing from these booklets. What is the point of learning how to be moral through memorization? But this person says, oh, she would have loved to have had more admats instead. Okay, I can't agree with you there, but you are very right. How do you learn morals through memorization? It's through actions.
I do not know if she hated the subject so much that she would rather have done admats. Which says a lot. Or if she just really loved maths.
No judgment. I think that's part of moral studies yes. as well.
You can keep the conversation going. You can still tweet us at BFM Radio, WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899, or keep in touch with us on Facebook. We are at BFM, The Bigger Picture. If you missed any part of this show, you can download the podcast on BFM.my, on our BFM app, or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m., we have the second episode of Law in Behold, where Juliet will be exploring Article 5 on the right to life and personal liberty. You've been listening to The Daily Digest on BFM 89.9. Here's George Harrison to take us out with Bangladesh.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.